Father and mother, seated on either side of a table lighted only by a deeply shaded lamp, for the Duchess could not endure light and noise without suffering from nervous attacks. In the semi-darkness, they would exchange two or three sentences at most. Then the Duke would slip away with a yawn and take his departure by the first available train. At the Jesuits' college to which Jean was sent to be educated, his life proved more pleasant and less trying. The fathers made much of the lad, whose intelligence amazed them. Yet in spite of all their efforts, they entirely failed to induce him to pursue any definite and disciplined course of study. He devoted himself eagerly to certain tasks, acquired a precocious mastery of the Latin tongue, but on the other hand, he was absolutely incapable of construing three words of Greek, displayed no aptitude whatever for living languages, and showed himself a perfect fool directly any attempt was made to teach him the merest rudiments of the physical sciences. His family pretty much washed their hands of him. Occasionally, his father would pay him a visit at the college, but "good day, good evening, be a good boy and work hard," was about all he ever said to him. His summer holidays he used to spend at the Chateau de Lourdes, where his presence quite failed to rouse his mother from her reveries. She hardly seemed to see him, or if she did, would gaze at him for a few moments with a painful smile, then sink back again into the artificial night in which the heavy curtains drawn across the windows wrapped the apartment. The domestics were old and tiresome. The boy, left to himself, would turn over the books in the library on wet days, or on fine afternoons take long walks in the country. It was his great delight to make his way down into the valley to Jutigny, a village standing at the foot of the hills, a little cluster of cottages with thatched roofs tufted with moss. He would lie out in the meadows under the lee of the tall hayricks, listening to the dull rumble of the watermills, filling his lungs with the fresh air of the Voulzy. Sometimes he would wander as far as the peat workings, to the hamlet of Longueville, with its hovels painted green and black. At another time, climb the windswept hills and gaze out over the vast prospect. There he had below him on one side the valley of the Seine, losing itself in immensity and melting into the blue haze of the far distance. On the other, high on the horizon line, the churches and castle keep of Provins that seemed to shake and shiver in a sunlit dust cloud. He spent the hours in reading or dreaming, drinking his fill of solitude till nightfall. By dint of constantly brooding over the same thoughts, his mind gained concentration, and his still undeveloped ideas ripened towards maturity. After each vacation, he went back more thoughtful and more stubborn to his masters. These changes did not escape their notice. Clear-sighted and shrewd, taught by their profession to sound the deepest depths of the human soul, they were well aware of the qualities and limitations of this alert but indocile intelligence. They realized that this pupil of theirs would never enhance the fame of the house, and as his family was wealthy and appeared to take little interest in his future, they soon abandoned all idea of directing his energies towards any of the lucrative careers open to the successful student. Though he was ready enough to enter with them into those theological disputations that attracted him by their subtleties and casuistical distinctions, they never even thought of preparing him for holy orders, for despite their efforts, his faith remained feeble. In the last resort, out of prudence and a fear of the unknown, they left him to himself to work at such studies as he chose and neglect the rest, unwilling to alienate this independent spirit by petty restrictions such as lay ushers are so fond of imposing. So he lived a perfectly contented life, scarcely conscious of the priest's fatherly yoke. He pursued his Latin and French studies after his own fashion, and albeit theology found no place in the curriculum of his classes, he completed the apprenticeship to that science which he had begun at the Chateau de Lourdes, in the library of books left by his great-great-uncle Dom Prosper, erstwhile prior of the canons regular of Saint-Ruf. The time, however, arrived when he must quit the Jesuit college. He was coming of age, and would be master of his fortune. His cousin and guardian, the Comte de Montchevrel, gave him an account of his stewardship. The intimacy thus established was of short duration, for what point of contact could there be between the two, one of whom was an old man, the other a young one? Out of curiosity, lack of occupation,